ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Global roaming is expanding to keep pace with your world.
Because keeping up can be a challenge.
And events can feel overwhelming beyond our understanding.
What might Xi Jinping do next?
What hand is Trump hiding?
Join me, Hamish McDonald, Geraldine Doogue, Latika Burke and Kylie Morris.
Four voices bringing perspective, experience and energy to the big global stories.
Global roaming, weekdays at 11 on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen.
مکتب درس بخون دختر جان بتونی از داره افغانستان دختر جان.
After they returned to power in 2021, Afghanistan's Taliban rulers banned girls over the age of 12 from singing in public. And the prohibition sparked this wave of online protests across the country, with women and girls posting videos of themselves singing, using the hashtag I Am My Song. Aged just 14, Nili Ibrahimi's song, Boro Baka Ba Maktab, or Go to School, became an anthem of this movement. And I'm excited to say, on Big Ideas Today, Nila joins you.
They told you to be silent and keep your head.
Yes, this is your front row seat to the best live events right here on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen. I'm Natasha Mitchell. Nila Ibrahimi and her family were forced to flee Afghanistan, eventually resettling in Canada. Now aged 20, Nila has continued to fight for the rights of women and girls in her homeland. In 2024, she was awarded the International Children's Peace Prize and has co-founded Her Story, which is a storytelling initiative that amplifies the voices of Afghan girls both inside Afghanistan and across the diaspora. Today on Big Ideas, Nila joins us on her first visit to Australia, the University of New South Wales' Centre for Ideas, for the 2025 Gandhi Oration. Joined by host Professor Verity Firth, Vice President, Societal Impact, Equity and Engagement at the University.
Take a seat.
Thank you.
That was absolutely wonderful, Nila.
Thank you, Verity. I had so much fun preparing for this. Thanks.
What I thought I'd do is start with a question about what we're talking about tonight, about how age isn't a definer of who can have influence. And I was obviously doing a bit of research and watching the speeches you've made in the past. And when you received the International Children's Peace Prize, you said, activism for Afghan girls or anyone who has lived through injustices is not a choice. It's a necessity. But as I watched you speak, I thought, that's so true. But activism also takes a lot of personal courage, especially in countries where, you know, the punishments can be harsh. And you were just 14 when your advocacy began. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk to you a little bit about where that courage came from for you and how do you reflect on that moment now?
I think, you know, growing up in Afghanistan, there were so many battles that, you know, every person, every Afghani had to go through. But for women, you know, it was so much harder because there's not only the gender inequality issues, there's the taboos and the, you know, ideas that are ingrained in the systems that the society works with, ingrained from the first time the Taliban came. And so girls had to deal with that every single day. And when we look at the general public had to deal with a lot of other issues like the unsafetiness and the discrimination and the other things, all the millions of things that Afghans had to go through on a single day-to-day basis. So thoughts of protest, thoughts of, I want to stand against this. This is not something that I want to live through and I don't want my children to go through, is something that happens a lot. And this is a very common thing for people from Afghanistan. And so, you know, standing against a decision like that, like the protest that I did, it was the first time that a decision was impacting my own life. So on a personal level, and that courage came from believing that this decision really is going to affect my life. And I don't want to let that happen. And, you know, there are so many places we take that inspiration of standing against something and getting that courage from. For me personally, that comes from seeing how my single mother lived in Afghanistan. You know, like being a single mother is hard. But being a single mother in a country like Afghanistan is difficult on another level. And so seeing how she battled through, how she stood against the battles that she had to go through every day, you know, that became a sense of courage and inspiration for me. And I'm sure that Afghans in Afghanistan have so many other things that they can draw inspiration from, because it's a country full of stories. When things happen, you know, when harsh things happen, there's a lot of courage that comes through that, because we're tough.
Yeah.
You know, and I've noticed that since I've come outside of Afghanistan, that Afghans, we've been through a lot, but it really, you know, it really has shaped some character.
So there was courage all around you. You saw a lot of examples of courage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us what's happened in Afghanistan since you've left? So you left in 21, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. And so what's been going on recently in Afghanistan?
So I'm going to start from the first time that the Taliban came in 2021. They started by saying that we've changed, that, you know, we're going to accept women's rights, we're going to be respectful of human rights. But something felt wrong, and it felt very performative for the media, because at that time they didn't have as much power. They had just come to the country. But slowly they brought back the rules and the, you know, restrictions that they had 20 years ago when my mom lived through their first regime. And it started by not letting girls go to school. So now they can only go to school from first grade to sixth grade. And then it started by not letting them decide how they want to dress in public. They can't go out without a man escorting them right now. They were banned from gyms and parks. Now they can't be heard in public. And of course they can't pursue their passions of or hobbies of, you know, sports or arts. They're all banned. And recently there was an internet ban, which was horrific. And for 2 days, no one in Afghanistan could be reached. They couldn't communicate with the outside world, which was just reminding me of North Korea. And it was so hard to live through that. And I'm sure for Afghans who have families back home, that was so horrible to go through. The reasons are not still out, like what's happening. So we're not sure why that happened, but it's really terrible to think that the Taliban have that much power, that they can just cut the world from, you know, knowing what is going on in Afghanistan. So to know that we're dealing with a government like that, that can just do whatever they want without any reasoning behind it, it's really horrible to live through that. And I think when it comes to how it's impacting girls in Afghanistan, you know, online education is their only hope right now. And I'm in contact, and I know of so many organizations that are helping them get education online. And to see that what happened, that can happen again, it's really hard to see that, you know, that was the only hope of these girls. And it can be stripped away at any time.
So how did you and your family get out of Afghanistan?
I'm thinking of writing a book about that because it was a really long journey. We left 5 days after the fall to Pakistan because, you know, the 15th of August, the Taliban came. The 20th of August, I didn't know the morning of that day that we would be leaving, because it was just, they were bringing out new rules at the, you know, every day. So we just got to this conclusion that we have to leave. We went to Pakistan, and it was really hard because we were going from city to city, not knowing how long we would be in Pakistan. We were undocumented refugees. We were there illegally, so I couldn't get an education. So with the help of the 30 Birds Foundation, which was the foundation we were connected with through the help of the school I was going to in Afghanistan, we got to Canada after a year. And so it was a very long journey, but I'm happy that, you know, I have all the rights that any girl should have right now in Canada.
Yeah, and the 30 Birds Foundation got a lot of you out of Afghanistan. How many people altogether?
So there were two rounds.
Yeah.
The first round 200 girls with their families in the second round, which I was a part of, 200 girls with and without their families. So most of them were girls who were going to the school that I was a part of.
Wow. And yeah. So you were all going to the same school in Afghanistan?
Yes.
Right. Wow. That's amazing. And you first, which town, I tried to say it behind stage and I didn't pronounce it right. Which town did you first get to in Canada?
Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Yeah. So very small town, great place to start life in Canada in, but maybe not the best one to be at forever. That's why I moved to Vancouver, but yeah.
Yeah. And you were telling me it was like minus 40 degrees.
Oh yeah. That was one of the reasons you left.
So you speak passionately about the power of education. And you've said in the past that if you build a school or educate even one girl, you have made a difference. So you've already told us about how the battle for girls' education is going, like in terms of people can't officially attend education after year six, which is actually terrible and a complete denial of human rights, obviously. What is it that the international community can do to help keep the pressure on the Taliban?
I think the very first thing, and I get this question a lot, is, you know, talking about it, acknowledging that this is an issue that is impacting real people. It's not just numbers, you know, that you scroll through Instagram and you see a post from UN Women and it's saying that it's been 4 years as girls in Afghanistan can't go to school and you're just like, it's another post. It's not another post. It's real people that are being impacted by this. And an example I bring up a lot is, you know, I left Afghanistan when I was going through my midterm exams of grade 9. And I've graduated high school. I'm a first year university student. But when I talk to my friends back home, they're still frozen in time. And so I think of that a lot myself, and that's what drives me. But acknowledging that this is a real issue, empathizing with the people that are being impacted by this is the first step. And then getting out there and seeing who is active in this issue and in solving this problem and getting in touch with them. There's a lot of organizations that are helping the girls in one way or another. Most of them are, you know, things that can't be talked about in public, but just being out there and getting in touch with people who are active. And truly, I believe when we want to be a part of a solution, there are so many ways. And just some examples that I can give is online schools, volunteering with the girls to talk to them and to teach them, give them some of your time and some of your attention. That means the world to them. It truly represents that the world hasn't forgotten about them. And so, yeah, I would say those are ways we can help.
Yeah, which is why the cutting off the internet was so damaging. Yeah. You had a musical group in Afghanistan, Sound of Afghanistan, which is, I imagine, also why you felt it was so deeply affecting your life when they said they wanted to ban singing over the age of 12. So most of the people in Sound of Afghanistan were also part of the people who came to Saskatoon with you at the time. Are you still connected to Sound of Afghanistan? And how did you draw strength from this community?
I think, you know, when I think about Afghanistan, I really remember the school that I was going to.
Yeah.
It was just a dreamy place. I know that sounds corny, but it's really true.
Yeah.
Because in a country like Afghanistan, there's rarely places you can go and talk about your dreams and be able to speak up and just be respected as a, not just as a human being with values, but, you know, as a girl, as a woman. And so growing up, my siblings went to the school and I was like, well, maybe I should too. Mm. And when I did, I really understood why they were just really obsessed with everything that was going on at the school. Because, you know, we were taught to speak up. We were taught to question things. We could get in arguments with our teachers in class because we didn't believe in the same thing they were talking about, but respectfully, of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were other extracurricular activities that, you know, not just boys, but girls could take part in as well. And as my siblings were taking part in this musical group, I was like, maybe I should too. And as soon as I joined it, I fell in love with everything that we were doing because we weren't just singing for, you know, I don't know, Mother's Day, Teacher's Day, special occasions at our own school, which was so fun when I think about it. That's what I really miss about my country right now. But it was also the school trips we would have to, you know, to sing on national TV, which was breaking taboos, literally. Because, you know, Afghanistan was not ready to see women stand on stage and sing. And when I say women, I mean teenage girls. And
I think when that ban happened, I felt like our group was the group that was really attacked.
Yep.
Because, you know, I can't name another group that was bringing boys and girls to sing about their rights, about, you know, things that were political.
Yep.
On stages, on national TV. And so when I think about that group, that's really where I learned to speak up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that gave me the courage to stand on stage, sing about my beliefs. And when that was taken away, you know, the passion that I had for that, for being part of that group, that was what motivated me to speak up against that ban.
And so they're mostly back in Saskatoon, but you still see them each year, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. So they're mostly in Saskatoon.
Yep.
Some of them have moved to Toronto or Vancouver like us.
Yep.
But yes, there is a gala. The 30 Burst Foundation has a Wingspan Gala, they call it that. And I see them every year. So it's the greatest thing. I'm looking forward to it. It's happening in November.
That's lovely. That's really lovely. So this was a one because we've got all this politics about social media going on in Australia. And the fact that your song went viral and forced the Taliban to back down on their ban on women singing, well, not just your song, but all of these sorts of songs that flooded social media during the ban, in many ways, it demonstrates the power of social media in activism, right? And I know that globally, in modern activism, social media has been very powerful. But there's obviously a lot of commentary in the West about the negative impacts of social media on young people. And I just wanted to get your views on, given your experience.
Yeah. I think if I were to just block my memory from Afghanistan and everything I knew before, I could really relate to why this ban is happening in Australia. But it really depends on the context and the country we're talking about. Because, you know, in Afghanistan, I mean, here, let's talk about here first, because it's more relatable. When we look at the Western world, social media can be addictive. It's known, you know, the things that come out when we say, come to mind when you say social media, it's addictive. It's, I don't know, propaganda in the U.S. right now, and many other negative connotations that are associated with it. When I think of Afghanistan, it's, you know, where people got connected and where they talked about ideas and how they didn't believe in things that were going on in the government and what was going wrong. And it's really where a lot of teenagers and young people came together to discuss about their ideas, you know, and a lot of activists came out from that, from being able to share ideas, connect with each other. And so I think it really depends on the in the context, but the social media right now, when I look at it in Afghanistan, it's and throughout my time in Afghanistan, it's really been a tool for change. It's been really powerful. And though you can, if you use it too much, of course, the negative connotations just can exist in Afghanistan or wherever you are in the West, but it really was a tool for change in Afghanistan. And I think it still is. Because, you know, girls can't go out in public and protest anymore, they will be beaten up, but they can post something. They can talk with people outside of the country or inside the country, and that does something, you know? It does something to someone who feels hurt and seen and knows that they're not alone in dealing with something. Mm. So that just brings me back to the internet ban and how horrible that was.
Yeah. And you can also see why governments may want to turn the internet off when it's being used for activism in that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very powerful organisational tool. Did you use the same platforms as, like, were you Facebook and Instagram? Is it all the same platforms?
I think what I'm going to say is going to make some Australians happy because at that time I was 14. I had no access to social media. So I was completely off.
Yeah.
I was really good at school when I think about it now because I wasn't on social media. But, you know, my brother was on it. He was on Twitter, everything. He was good at school too.
Yeah.
Let's just be honest about that.
Social media as this vital lifeline right now for those living inside Afghanistan. And Hazara teen Neela Ibrahimi went viral when she used it to protest against the Taliban's ban on girls going to school. The advocate, activist, musician, student, 2024 International Children's Peace Prize winner later found refuge with her family in Canada, and we are joining her on a recent visit to Australia here on ABC Radio National's Big Ideas with me, Natasha Mitchell. And she's on stage at the University of New South Wales's Centre for Ideas in conversation with Professor Verity Firth.
So how do you feel, like most people in this room wouldn't have imagined a life that you've had over the past 4 years. Like, that must have been just even fleeing your country. Like, you know, they come to power, 5 days later you've fled the country to Pakistan. You know what I mean? All of that, arriving in a brand new country. How do you feel that your experiences have shaped you, and what do you carry forward from them?
I think sometimes when I think about it, it puts me in an advantage, unfair advantage. But getting to this perspective took a lot of time, because when I first got to Canada, all I could see was, you know, I was going through the cultural shock phase and everything, and I was still really homesick about Afghanistan. It's a really horrible time. It was a horrible time. All I could think of was the negative things that came out of the experiences I had, you know, just missing my friends, missing everything I knew from back home, and having to start from scratch. Though I was just 15, 14 at that time, you know, I know people who move at when they're 30 or older, it's much harder, but it was just really hard for me to adjust and to have to start life from zero again. But when I think about it now, it really, going back to my point earlier, it really gives me character, because, you know, resilience and patience and being able to care for other people and be empathetic, and have the chance to, you know, use the voice and the platform that I have right now for girls who don't have that, it's really a privilege for me. And when I think about it, everyone who got the chance to get out of Afghanistan after the fall, they really do. And I see some Afghans here right now, and I just want to say that we have a big responsibility when it comes to, you know, just being able to flee the country. We have to speak up about what's happening, because it's truly a privilege to be able to have these experiences, but also have the ability to live a normal life.
Yeah. You're about to start university, which I think is going to be an amazing time for you. You already won a scholarship to go to a school in Vancouver. I think that was right, wasn't it? So you're doing really well in your studies. But how do you feel you'll start growing into yourself as you step into this new phase of your learning?
I think I'm appreciating education very differently. When I got to Canada, I was in grade 10. So I finished grade 10 in Saskatchewan. The public system, not very my style. And then grade 11 and grade 12, I started high school in Vancouver, and it was intense. It was a really intense private school. So that was still hard, because I was still going on stage and, you know, talking about these things. And I got the Peace Prize last year, but I was still in my senior year. So a lot of chaotic stuff going on with balancing school and, you know, the speaking stuff. But right now, I think because I've had a break from advocacy, this is, I'd say, my first time after the Peace Prize ceremony that I'm out and talking. It really gave me the chance, the break that I had, to appreciate education on another level. Because, you know, I saw it as a burden for a long time, as any teenager does. But right now, I see it as a way of, you know, just harnessing my abilities and my skills as a person, and how I can voice my opinions and how I can think critically and how I can analyze information. And to be an Afghan girl and have this right at this time, it's really a privilege. So I just sometimes have to tell myself that and remind myself that every time I'm like, really?
Why do I have to do this essay?
Yeah, an essay or a computer science assignment or an econ lecture I have to go to. I just have to, you know, remind myself where I come from and who I am and what this is, what this means for me as an Afghan girl. So my experience has really helped me not take that right for granted.
And you're right that in terms of the experiences that you've had as an activist role model, it's been pretty incredible. So you've spoken at many large events. You've spoken at the UN. This year you spoke at the Clinton Global Initiative annual meeting. You're obviously International Young Person of the Year. Is that
International Twitter speech?
But I did watch that speech, and it was really wonderful, and it looked like it was in a very large room full of very influential people. So you've really had your voice heard on a global stage. One of the reasons why we had this event is that we want to honour Gandhi, who believed in advocacy through strength, through the power of words, and through non-violence. So what does that philosophy mean to you personally, and how do you embody it in your leadership?
To be compared to Gandhi, or just to draw from everything that he stood for, I'm going to need a minute for that. But I think mainly, you know, what I really focus on is the power of words, the power of sharing stories and the power of listening to each other and just drawing something for everything that someone has to tell, you know. And that's when I got out of Afghanistan, or when the country fell, I was just, you know, instantly, as any Afghan did, thought about how I could help solve this problem, which seemed so much bigger and still does so much bigger than me. And for me, it was worse. And the power of words. And I'm still working on solving this problem through storytelling. And, you know, the first year I got to Canada, I was invited to speak on different, you know, speaking engagements. And that's what I did for a while. But then I understood that what I understood was I can't carry the responsibility of representing Afghanistan just on my shoulder, because Afghanistan is so much more than just Nila. And there's so many other talented girls that I know that have to have this platform, because it's just going to be another stereotype ingrained in the minds of, you know, the Western world. And so I created Her Story with my brother as my as co-founders. And what we did was we interviewed girls online in Afghanistan, because what they're doing, how they're coping with what's going on in Afghanistan is incredible. They're building online businesses. They're, you know, making photography archives. They're being more active on social media, because, you know, that's what we talked about before, tool for change. And we covered those stories, and what that did to those girls and to our audience was really impressive. And so we widened that. And now we're focusing on interviewing girls outside of the country who are in diaspora, like people who have been really successful ever since they've gotten out of the country. So the business women, the artists, the people who are change makers, politicians. And these are really people who have immigrated, and other Afghan communities, you know, outside of the, like, the immigrant Afghans, they don't really know they exist. And so it's really important to have a platform where all Afghans can come together and see how capable we all are, and not just to strengthen our own sense of self, but the Western world needs to be reminded that Afghanistan is not just the tragic headlines. It's more than that. It's the potential of not just the girls, but also all of the people that come from there. So I would say storytelling is a really powerful tool, and I hope that it can bring the change that I'm hoping it will.
Yeah. And do the women or the girls that you interview in Afghanistan, so you do that over the net, how do you protect them? Do they ever have problems then, having been publicly identified?
That's what we consider, one thing we consider as well. So we do two things. We have a sector of Her Story, which is in their words. Yeah. So they submit their own writings. There is no identification. They don't talk about their names. It's all what they want to say. We have poems, we have art pieces, and we have stories that they write, both in English and in Farsi, Dari. And also the interviews that we do, we interview them, and then we have someone write an article, and we ask them if they feel comfortable, and we have to go through the signing a contract and everything, or consent form, sorry. Yeah. And we change the names sometimes, but most of them are anonymous. So it's whatever they feel comfortable sharing, but without their names.
So what advice would you give to other young people who have something to say and they don't know where to begin?
I would say, you know, answering this question, what really helps me is going back to the 13-year-old Nila before she posted the video and before it kind of went viral and this happened. I would say just believe that that gut feeling that you have, or that thing that burns inside of you, is going to lead somewhere. You just have to lean into it. And that's what I feel right now. And that's what I feel every time I get on stage, and I really feel connected. And maybe it's because of your energy. Thank you so much for, you know, being here. And I just think just reminding yourself that everything you do, just big or small, and leaning into the voice that tells you to take action, and that thing that really bothers you, and you're like, I want to change that. Just leaning into that and believing that whatever you do matters and has an impact, that's going to truly be remarkable. Because this is not just advice for young people. I've met a lot of people through this work who, of different backgrounds, different ages, who, you know, have told me that they've been impacted by what I've had to say, or they've been impacted by whatever is going on in Afghanistan and the other Afghan girls that they've met. And I think just believing that you have, your actions have power, it really can do remarkable things.
So Afghanistan's got a long way to go. It's what, I suppose, gives you hope?
That's the hardest question I have to answer. I can do this two ways. I can be honest, or I can pretend so we can all be hopeful. But I'm going to be honest. The reason I took a break from my advocacy was, you know, because I felt hopeless. I got the International Children's Peace Prize, and I was, you know, busy with school, and that's another story. But I was just thinking, you know, there were moments where I was doubting myself. I was doubting whether all of this was doing anything. And in those moments, I would go back. I would go back to the girls that I knew, to my friends back home, and to everything that they are going through every single day, and they have to put up with that, and how they're dealing with that, and how they're coping with that, and how they're taking action, and they're still standing, and they're not giving up. Every time I thought of that, I did not let myself give up, because I couldn't. And it's a privilege for me that I have the right to live a so-called normal life, and they don't. And I get my strength, I get my power, and I get my inspiration from the girls of my country.
Nila Ibrahimi, she's only 20 years old, an incredible advocate with an incredible story, really using her voice to speak up for women and girls of Afghanistan right now. And Nila is on Big Ideas today with you here on ABC Radio National and ABC Listen, also as podcast. I'm Natasha Mitchell. Thrilled to have your company. This 2024 International Children's Peace Prize winner is speaking at the University of New South Wales' Centre for Ideas with host Professor Verity Firth, and they're fielding some questions from the live audience next, starting with this one, asking how Australians can support Afghan women and girls to access education.
I think other than one thing I mentioned about volunteering your time to be in contact with the organizations that help with the online education, I think just universities in general being more eager to give scholarships to girls, Afghan girls, whether they've just gone out of the country somehow or they're in Afghanistan, they're qualified and they're applying, just being more eager to that is really helpful. Because what I've noticed is that after the fall, universities, especially Ivy Leagues in the U.S., they were more eager to accept Afghans because of the headlines and because of the power of social media and the media in general and how hectic the whole situation was. But it's still like that, and the media doesn't really cover it as much because it's not clickbait or whatever. It's not really good for their own system or strategies. But just keeping in mind that universities, if they're more eager to have more girls from Afghanistan, because they are qualified, they just need a push.
Yeah. And the thing is, there's so many more online options now than there used to be as well, right? Like, so yes, push for people to come and actually get visas and come as international students, but also just most universities now around the world have many, many more online options compared to what they used to have. So I think it's something we should be thinking about as a sector in a more coordinated way.
Yes.
Apart from your dreamy school, which is lovely, what do you miss most about Afghanistan?
I would say what I remember is, you know, the hospitality of Afghan people, how close everyone is, and the culture, and just the culture of being. You know, there is a lot of differences in Afghanistan, and we've come a long way with how the different nations and the different languages and the different ways of looking, how we've dealt with that throughout time. But I feel like in 2021, or the latest years we were there before the fall, we were getting somewhere. And people would change, you need time. But we were really on a path of change. And one more thing that I miss is, you know, I seem very activist-y here, like in the in the genre of school and or university, and I feel that people think I am very activist-y.
Yeah.
It's an Afghanistan thing, I think. It's very Afghanistan-y because, you know, I've said enough about how many things we have to go through, but that really changes something in you. It really makes you speak up, because a quote I heard once was, people who've never lost their voice don't know the impact or the value of their voice. So that really speaks to the experience of Afghans and how that really has built some activist-y character. So yeah. I would say I missed that too.
Yeah, that's really interesting. With the school that you went to, was that in Kabul?
Yes.
Yes. And was that how was that school established? Was it a government school, or was it a school that was privately funded, your dreamy school?
I think it was private, because it was built by Dr. Aziz Roish. He's in the U.S. right now, and he's a great person. I think there's a lot of stories about the school. There's a lot of books written about it, and I'm thinking some short films as well. But yeah, it was really one of a kind.
Yeah. And then also because it played such a role in getting young girls out of Afghanistan as well. So it's a really amazing story. Another question from the audience. Can you give us a sense of how your friends and their mothers back in Afghanistan spend their days, given the rules imposed on them?
It's really hard for me to imagine it myself too. But I would say using the least resources that they have, online schools or social media. But I would say social media really is what takes most of their time, and not in the way that we think in the West. No. But it is really horrible to have to imagine what they have to go through. But I really don't know specifically.
Yeah. Oh, this is nice. Can you tell us the Farsi word for courage? Because we will take it away with us.
Aw. Jurat. I hope that's not, that's not a hard Farsi word. So, yeah, you guys got lucky with that one.
What are you studying, and what are your plans for your future career? Will you continue to advocate, do you think?
As a fellow Afghan girl, advocacy will always be a part of my life in one way, shape, or form. I think of becoming a human rights lawyer. I'm not sure. That's plan A. Maybe there's a plan B, but I'm on a gap year right now, so I have some time to think about it. I'll be starting my studies at Wellesley College next year in Boston, and I'm thinking of studying cognitive systems, so I get to explore what I actually like outside of everything else that I've had exposure to, and just having the chance to actually see what I actually like.
Yeah.
But I think advocacy will always be a part of my life.
I think it's really interesting what you said about advocacy being more prevalent in Afghani culture, or like activism. And I think that's very true. Like, when you face genuine hardship, when you actually face real problems, there is a courage in humanity.
Yeah.
And maybe sometimes in the West, we're just too comfortable, you know what I mean, to properly have that courage. But maybe we need to learn, right? And to say, as you say, understand that privilege so that you actually stand up and help other people.
Yeah, it's the key word is privilege here.
Yeah.
That's how I talk to myself. I'm like, you're privileged to be here. You're privileged to go to school. You're privileged to live in Canada. And I feel like a lot of the work that we do with storytelling is that people, no matter where they come from, feel that, because we're all human and we shouldn't have to be, you know, going through different experiences just because of our skin color or where we come from. So I want to send that feeling to other people and share that with other people.
Ah, oh, now there's more coming up. Sorry, I've got it now.
That's great. Let's keep going.
Has it been difficult maintaining relationships with your cultural identity when you're so far away from Afghanistan?
Wow. Thinking that came from an Afghan. because you really have to go through it to know that it's a thing that comes out in the journey. I think connecting with Afghans in Canada has been really helpful.
Yeah.
Because we have events for any significant cultural occasions, the New Year's, or we have Ramadan, and we have Eids, and all of that. So connecting with people who have come outside of the country in Vancouver, where I live right now, and just every time I see Afghans, it just makes me really happy. And I just wanted to tell, like, ask them, so how did you end up here? Because I know every Afghan has... We have to write a book, each person, because there's a long story behind each one of us. So, yeah, just staying connected with the people. I think the people help with the culture.
Yeah.
And just not forgetting where I come from, which happens through every once in a while, sopping through some old photos that I watch or some videos that I see.
But, yeah. And how big is the Afghan community in Vancouver? Is it reasonably sized?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say it's not as small as the one in Saskatchewan, because yeah. when we went there, the big group that we were the only Afghans and the first Afghans, I would say, in Saskatoon. But yeah, Vancouver's, we have a large community of Afghans.
This is from Zora Anwari. When you planned to sing for the first time, which challenges did you face?
So my mom has lived through the first regime of the Taliban. And of course, as a mother does, she was worried that this was going to be too risky for me to put out into the world. And considering everything that the Taliban, or not the Taliban, the Afghanistan government would do, the Taliban were kind of there. There would be every once in a while, there would be an explosion and they would say, that was us. You know, it was hard to consider the risks of what could happen, because there had been protesters before, and to have to go through all of that and see what had happened to them, it was hard to consider those risks. But, you know, getting back to the passion, I was really stubborn. I was like, I really want this to be out there, because I can't imagine not being able to sing on stage. And I can just imagine my teenage self like thinking like that. And music and, you know, singing was a big part of my life back then.
Yeah.
So I can really relate to how, like, where that passion and drive came from.
If you could design one global action to support Afghan women and girls right now, what would it be? It's so difficult at the moment in the world, but is there anything that you think sort of combined governments could do, like a global action?
Oh, yeah. They could put more pressure on the current regime in Afghanistan. I mean, that's a very obvious thing that comes to mind, yes. because from my perspective, they can't function if they don't have the support of any other country. And I can name a few, but they're too powerful. you know, if they cut off Afghanistan from all the support that they're giving yeah. them, they would have to surrender. They would have to reconsider how they're approaching their human rights and women's rights issues. So I'd say, yeah, just putting more pressure on them.
Yeah. You described your start of life as a horrible time in Canada. How did you adapt to your new life there? In the freezing night, minus 40 degrees.
That was a very small part of the horrible things. I would say if I were to write a book, this question would get like a lot of chapters.
Yeah.
I would have to write a lot about it. But I think it's not, like, you know, when I said horrible, I didn't just mean because of the location of where I was in. It wasn't just the weather, guys. It was, you know, the mental things that you go through when you leave a country. And I'm sure the people who are not from Afghanistan here, you've left where you were from at least once, I'm supposing. It's hard to leave your country. But imagine if that country is, you know, struggling so much with so many things, the people are struggling all the time and have to think about that, and seeing that yourself, you have so many privileges. That's the emerging theme. So many privileges that the people back home don't have, and to deal with that guilt. Mm-hmm. But how did I get through it? Time really helps, because, you know, you have to let it happen to you, but you shouldn't let it pass by. You have to let the pain be there. I sound really corny right now, yeah. but you have to really feel the pain and just see what it does to you and feel it and let it be, and then take something from it, because it will pass, but don't let it make you bitter, you know. Just use it so you can improve through that. So I would say that that's what happened to me, I hope. And sometimes it's still hard. I mean, it's been 3 or 4 years. It's still hard, but I'd say the first year is really tough.
Yeah.
It really hits you.
But I think you're right. It would also give you incredible strength.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think you'd ever go back to Afghanistan?
If things change. Only if things change. I don't think it's the best choice right now.
Yeah.
Because the only question people ask is, how can we get people out?
Yeah.
And I don't think really that is sustainable. I don't think that works. But the only solution is if we fix what is happening in Afghanistan. We can't keep taking people out. But only if the regime changes. Only if it goes back to the way it was before.
Yeah.
I can go back home to the country that I once knew.
Mm. Yeah. My name is Molly Doherty. I'm 11 years old and Australian, and I was wondering what life is like for girls my age in Afghanistan and how can I support them?
Oh.
She must be here in the audience somewhere.
Molly.
Oh, there you are, Molly.
Hi, thank you for the question. 11-year-olds in Afghanistan, wow, to compare what an 11-year-old in Australia, just the difference is vast. Learning about what's going on in Afghanistan, you know, and just seeing, just leaning into how knowing how privileged you are and just not taking those rights for granted, because it's hard for, you know, it's hard for young people to bear the troubles of the world on your shoulders solely, but just focusing on understanding the problems and, you know, letting those feelings of, I really want to change this, I hope I can change this one day, just letting that be there until one day when you, you know, grow up and get to a position where you can solve that problem through your own expertise, you can really lean back to that. Because I think what happens a lot with a lot of adults or grown-ups is that they just let that voice fade away and they're like, I'm too incapable. But just believing that you are capable, that's enough.
The questions keep flowing in.
That's
so
great.
There's still time, so this is good. You touched on the struggles of migration, and everything you said makes absolutely perfect sense about how it would feel to be sort of rooted out of your country and then in some way completely strange. And what can we do to assist Afghan women and girls during this time? Mm. What would have helped from Canadians?
Yeah. Ooh, I think just talking to them and having some sort of organizations or programs where they can just be there and express themselves and not feel like they're being alienated by the society. And I think it's really a vulnerable time for Afghans or anyone who moves countries. It's really hard. But I think I had a good experience in Canada. It was just, there was a lot to deal with. So just having someone to process that with, talk it through, having communities of storytelling or just where you can talk about it, you know, and not feel like you're alone or feeling the support of fellow Canadians who are going to affirm those feelings and emotions, I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned the brothers and fathers in your song. Do they secretly try and help their sisters and daughters to learn, or do they comply with Taliban rules?
When I think of Afghan men, I immediately think into two categories. The ones that are very strict. They've given in into the taboos and the cultural disgusting ideas that the Taliban, you know, ingrained in the society the first time that they came. But then there's the category of the men who are progressive. The men who haven't been educated themselves, but they really do believe in equality. And it really amazes me. And it really just, you know, makes me tear up sometimes. I think it really depends. When I think of the Afghanistan I knew when I left, there was a rise of seeing progressive men who were, you know, allowing their girls to go to school, allowing their girls to have rights, and maybe just, I don't know, over dinner, just letting their girls contribute to the conversation, because that was a huge step in of itself. But right now, what I'm really scared of is that the guys can go to school, the boys can go to school. But what's happening to the education system, we don't know. So the Taliban might be doing whatever they want to do. So they might be turning it into a system where they are ingraining their own ideas into these young people who don't really know much. They're growing up and that's the education that they're getting. That's what they're feeding them. So that's my fear right now, that the education that the guys are getting is scarier than the lack of education for girls.
I think you could be right there, like just the power of, like, education so powerful, so liberating, but in the wrong hands and for the wrong purposes.
Yeah, it can be dangerous.
Yeah. And there's this wonderful question, which is, who is your favorite singer?
Oh, I don't know which answer to give you guys. I don't know if you're ready. So I listen to a bunch of songs, pop, Western, I grew up listening to Selena Gomez, and I would tell people in Canada that, and they would be like, wow, you know who that person is? And I'm like, yeah, we have internet and like we have YouTube and everything, you know, like we're people. So that's what I was inspired to do, like in her story too. But yeah, like Selena Gomez and Justin Bieber and all those people. But I listened to a lot of, you know, Afghan singers as well. Yeah. And I've had the honor of meeting some of them. So it's been really cool to see them in person. But I would say Arina Saeed, she is the first Afghan singer, female singer. Mm-hmm. And as I said, there were a lot of taboos for girls to sing, right? But she would, you know, just be so reckless in breaking those taboos. Yeah. So I would say her as well.
Wonderful. Is she still in Afghanistan?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
She had to leave as well.
Good to know.
That would be horrible.
Yeah. What has the reception been from Canadians since you arrived in Canada? So, you know, one of the things that's interesting, because I was talking to your brother about this backstage, which is one of the things that's good about Canada is that they've got this pathway for refugees where communities can sponsor refugees and they can raise the money and then they can bring them out, and it helps in terms of just refugee places that are available. And Australia doesn't do that, but it's the sort of thing that we could try to do here. So this is really about, so reception really means what are Canadians like when people arrive, and how has their greeting, their having you come into their country, what's it been like?
It's been an amazing experience. Canadian, it's not just a myth, guys. Canadians are really nice. They're really polite. You know, I've had to learn to hold the door like for like 10 seconds, even if the person's like right there, you have to wait to hold it or else you're not Canadian enough. I'm scared sometimes if I don't hold it, they're not going to give me the passport. But, you know, saying sorry a lot. But aside from the jokes, it really has been an amazing experience. Canadian are really, really accepting when it comes to refugees and, you know, immigrants. And I've seen it in the way my teachers behaved with me. I've seen it in the way people my age have treated me, which is, you know, it's harder to expect a lot from people my age because, you know, it's a different way of upbringing. But then when I see that they're so kind and so, you know, curious about my experience, but in a respectful way, I'm just so amazed. So I'm really thankful that Canadians have given me that experience.
I remember being in Vancouver, and on every zebra crossing, which is like where you cross the road, they just stopped for you. Like there was never, you know what I mean? Or you're just even trying to sort of jaywalk illegally across the road and the cars will still stop for you. So I agree.
Yeah.
I think the Canadians are very nice people. This will probably be the last question. What are you most proud of from your journey?
These are really good questions. Thank you, guys. I would say every time that those doubtful thoughts come back, you know, that I talked about in my last year that I've had a lot, just how I deal with those, that's what I'm really proud of, because it's the dark moments that nobody sees that really impact you the most. It's the moments where you feel powerless and in the face of everything that you're trying so hard to solve. And the way of, you know, taking myself back up and told myself that it's not going to be over like this, that is what I'm most proud of. That I hope that resonates with some people here.
You've been wonderful, Neela. It has been such a pleasure meeting you. And I know that everybody else feels the same way. So thank you so much. Congratulations almost seems too twee. It's amazing what you've done and the bravery and the courage that you've had. And I think you're going to have a really big impact on the world, whatever you decide to do.
Thank you, Gertie. Yeah. This has been amazing. Thanks so much.
One of the things I think that's great about Neela is I think you do embody, like, essentially Gandhi's message was peace, was a change through peace and change through sort of what was really peaceful civil resistance. And I think that everything you've said tonight pretty much embodies that philosophy entirely. So I think you're a wonderful representation of the Gandhi.
And that was the annual Gandhi Oration at the University of New South Wales' Centre for Ideas with Afghan refugee and winner of the prestigious International Children's Peace Prize, the incredible
Nila Ibrahimi, a very powerful advocate. She was speaking there with UNSW Professor Verity Firth on ABC Radio National's Big Ideas, where we bring you big thinkers at the best live events. And you can email us, bigideas@abc.net.au. Tell us what you think of the speakers that we bring you, or perhaps you're connected in some way to Afghanistan. I'd love to hear from you. The show is produced by Claire Slattery, Karin Zivanovits, and me, your host, Natasha Mitchell. Mixing the show, audio engineer David LeMay, and thank you for your ears. Always appreciated. Bye, until next time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.